Welcome back to Innovative Minds. Now, I have wanted to have this guest for some time now. We've been talking about it for 4 months. I have been watching him really build his personal brand strength by strength for the last, I think I've been observing four to six months, really quite seriously, and probably a year showing up on my feed. And Robert Hanna, and I don't know if you've come across him because many of you may have, has really caught my attention. What he does is does legal content, right? And you think that would be quite boring and it's going to be like crap, but he really captures your attention pushing out legal content. And I, of course, was like, oh, is he a lawyer putting out legal content? That's really interesting for me watching ongoing. That's a sector that never does content. We hardly hear anything from it, but you see Robert, and he is, and should I call you Rob instead?
Mel and Rob. I like that. It's got a good ring to it.
I like it. So Rob has really propelled in this sector that I kind of was like, it's really dull and boring, but I actually hit follow on him for some weird, weird reason. But which is weird because he's actually targeting to recruit lawyers. I thought he was a lawyer initially when I just see his content, but he's actually recruiting lawyers and then has gone on and done a whole lot, right? That's not your full story, Rob.
It's not. Well, firstly, can I say thank you so much for having me on the show? And you're very kind with your words of introduction, but I'm also a fan of what you do. And I think, you know, it's really important that you bring on these incredible voices and guests that I've also been seeing that you've been doing, because there is so much that building a personal brand can do for your professional career, your personal life, and everything else in between. So, yeah, I'm really honored to be here and happy to try and share a bit of my story.
Yeah, amazing. Take me back to your journey. Like, take me back to the beginning of your entrepreneurship. Like, when's the first time you enter it? And was personal brand ever part of it back then?
No, was the first, is the honest answer. So I did have no clue about a personal brand. Subconsciously, yes, but consciously, no. So my journey, sort of very quick whistle-top store, I graduated from the University of Leeds in the north of the UK. I moved into the city of London and started at a FTSE 250 company around the time of the Lehman's crash for a recruitment company that was very highly regarded, but it was day one. And people were getting fired, jobs were being lost left, right, and center. So, you know, I joined at quite a tough time to start a career in recruitment. But I'm very grateful for that experience because I think I picked up a lot of the skills needed to survive, which as you go into entrepreneurship and as you go into, you know, new ventures or you take more additive risk, you need a lot of the skills that you pick up in downturn or tough markets. So anyway, I spent some time there for a year and a half. My boss left who had hired me. He tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey. So I moved to a boutique, another recruitment firm. I helped scale that from sort of being in a basement with no windows, three people to 40, 50 people, turning over £2.45 million pounds sterling as a team. And I was ahead of that in my mid-20s, hit directorship. And I thought, this is great. Life's going really well, but it's not giving me that sense of purpose that I really wanted. So I set up my own company, which was KC Partners in 2016 in the legal industry. And I guess to answer the why, because I could have easily been my wage, be my cage, trapped in the corporate circuit, healthy, no need to take risk, could easily just go through life. But you just know, if you've got that entrepreneurial spirit, you've got that thing in you, that's never going to keep you away from kind of chasing and bashing down doors to go and get your dreams, right? So why legal? Let's tap that. So my grandfather was a lawyer in the UK. He ran a very successful law firm over here in the 1950s that went on to be one of the most prominent outside of London, which is obviously our major city over here in the UK. So it was a very strong regional firm. And I always wanted to keep the family name and legacy within legal, given what he had built as a practicing lawyer and how well his reputation was in an offline world with no social media, no internet, no video, barely a fax machine. And I thought, wow, he had such a strong legacy and reputation after leaving and building something. I thought, I want to have a business. I want to do what he did, but also in my world, in a tech world, in a hyper-connected world, to leave a legacy that can be searchable and traceable for my family. Because a lot of what my grandfather achieved is very much offline. It's hard to navigate to go back to really understand the story and the journey. That's why I'm so keen to do these podcasts, tell as many people about it, because it will be there indefinitely for people to search and see. So that's kind of how I got into it, why I wanted to be an entrepreneur and why legal.
I think the leave a legacy thing, do you think that's like something that resides in all of us, in us entrepreneurs? Like, is that... I know I have that desire. I want to leave something. I don't know what it is, but I want to leave an imprint.
Your insurance and policy not to quit, right? It's your accountability statement. Because trust me, folks, entrepreneurship is not sexy. It's pretty much, you know, if you have 52 good days in a year, you've had a good year. That's one a week, if you want to put it in context. Because most of the time you're putting out fires, you're struggling with things, and you're seeing the top of the funnel, the iceberg on social media. That's not true, right? And so unless you've got a reassuringly why or legacy, which clearly you have as well, Mal, you know, you're not going to get through. You're going to quit, right? Because you're not going to have that kind of will to want to get up, that accountability, like what is your mission? Because it's tough. But the flip side of that, everything else is so amazing. So it's just having that grit. So yeah, I absolutely agree. I think true entrepreneurs have that kind of legacy, that why in them, and that's what pulls them through.
Yeah, and do you know what? I think it's also like I just can't imagine working for someone like that. I would rather
I'm unemployable.
Like super poor.
I'm like, unemployable.
I'd rather be super, super poor. I think I'd rather be homeless than... I don't know if that's true, but you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like I just can't have someone tell me, since I've left corporate, like, you know, you've got to do this at this time, and you like didn't turn up at like X amount at this time to work, so I'm gonna like judge you, and you know your progression's gonna be not great because you decide to start at 10 a.m. You're lazy, and you're like, no.
But that's the beauty of technology and the way of the world. You know, there's so much more opportunity, there's so much more infrastructure that why do you have to wear, in my case, a shirt and tie, be at an office 9 to 5, have a lunch break here, and that determines whether I'm good or bad at my job, and just because of that.
Correct.
No, like you can. And that statement you just made, it tells me you're obviously a true entrepreneur. Like, you know, you want to do it your way. You can. You know, everything that's out there now, every opportunity to start a business. You know, I was listening to a podcast myself the other day, and this is going to make your jaws drop. With the advent of technology and AI, it has now been scientifically and research focused that it'll take three people to create the next billion-dollar company, right? So let's put that in context. Years and years and years ago, you need tens of thousands members of staff, right? You need the office, you'd need the infrastructure, you need the people, you need the managers, et cetera, et cetera. Fast forward to Instagram, who did it as 11 people, right? And now we're scaling that down to 3. So it's... results or excuses, never both. If you want to go for it, like, you can just go for it. And that, trust me, have the right people in your network, listen to people on Mel's show, network with the right sort of people, and you can do it. Like, you know, the world we live in now, there's no excuse for not wanting to start your business.
I agree with you. I think the 3 people and 1 billion is 100% possible with the new tech, the ChatGPT, the workflow releases. And you know what's so exciting is, like, I always envision, oh, I want like 100, 200, 300 plus talent business. That was like my goal. Like, if you asked me 4 years ago, I'm going to run like a multinational company. If you asked me today, like, what I would want, if I could have 10 talented people, like, you know, around me, even like 3, just, you know, and I could achieve it and I could have an amazing connection with them, that would be so fulfilling. Because, you know, when your company grows into large, you can only get like pieces to people. So your connection with your staff drops. So to be able to do this and have that kind of tight bond with your staff, and they're not doing these, you know, minutia tasks anymore. So you can have this high quality staff around you who are like empowered and can use all these different tools, is a really exciting world to live in.
And I think we became, building on your point, I think we became very sort of, you know, conditioned to the more people you have, the more successful your business is, which is incorrect, right? Years gone by, potentially, the more people you have, the more problems you have, the more costs you have, the more pressure you have to make money to make it profitable, right? Unless your systems 100%. And processes are great. So boutique is beautiful, is what I tell people. Being small, being niche, being nimble, you can be a team of one, but be more powerful. You know, my distribution reach is stronger and larger, and I don't say this in an arrogant way, I say it in a confident way, than my competitors in the legal recruitment industry have been around for 20 years. Right? Because I've leveraged the tools. And I've recently had a Shark Tank equivalent, Dragon's Den, come on my own Legally Speaking podcast, which maybe we'll talk about in a bit. But he talked very much about the value pyramid with modern future of work and everything involved. Doesn't matter if you're a doctor, lawyer, surgeon, accountant. The mundane tasks, like you referenced, are going to get filled up with technology, right? Technology is going to come in and disrupt. And so unless you're able to move up the value pyramid as a service provider or product, you will be taken out. And that's where people get shocked about, oh, my job's going to get taken away. Yes, it will. If you don't embrace learning, if you don't develop, if you don't want to kind of move up the value pyramid, because, you know, we don't sit on horses and ride now. We have cars, you know, cars, things move forward. So, you know, for me, I'm always staying curious. Do I have all the answers? No. I don't think any entrepreneur or any business owner has all the answers. But the main thing is you've got to stay curious, you've got to listen, and you've got to be prepared for change. A lot of people don't like change.
100%. I love this part where you said you have to keep pushing up your value prop because technology is going to keep coming in and it's not going to value what you were doing as you were. Yeah. Like, I remember, you know, sort of 12 months ago, 18 months ago, if I offered people like, you know, 4 or 5 video edits or 6 video edits, people would be like, wow, like I'm going to pay like $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 for that. Like it was so high value to be able to record a video, edit it, and then push that out for people. Like they really thought, you know, and a person would come to your house and you pay them thousands of dollars. I mean, now people go, okay, well, I've got a gimbal, I've got a 4K camera right there. I can just have the setup. So I'm now like pushing out one cost straight away. Now overlay that with automation of technology like Descript, which is like subtitling really quickly, removing all the pauses, which used to take video editors ages to figure that out. I mean, you know, the value now is not even in the video editor. That has like no value. It's like nothing. The value is only in the strategy of what do I put out and why and what length and short and what's the title going to be, you know, that's going to really be purposeful, meaningful and value to my audience. That's the only thing that people really see value in the whole context.
It's so true. I mean, even take the platform we're using. I use Riverside FM. I like Riverside FM. Yeah. You know, you could, even as an amateur podcaster, you didn't want to use a podcast agency. You could use their in-house tools. You can create short clips. You can do their, you know, what they have available for you. You can use like their editor and out, you know, all these little things. Yes. So yeah, unless you are, as you rightly say, moving up, I think you're at risk. And I think there's a real naivety with a large proportion of people not sort of understanding that, you know, the speed of change is going to be faster than we could ever imagine. And so now is the time to stay curious.
Yeah. Let's fast forward to, so you set up, you know, Casey Partners, right?
Yeah.
Then what, like at what point do you go, so you know that subconsciously social media exists, like at what point in your journey are you like, okay, I've got to do some marketing now, or I've got to bring some work in, or, you know, or were you just like, let's just hunt like normal back then? So when do you see this transition in your journey?
Yes, this is really important for anyone listening. As much as you're passionate and your business is your everything, no one cares. Okay. No one cares until you tell them to care and give them a reason to care and understand why they should care. So just because I'd set up another legal recruiting firm, it's not enough. I've got established competitors. I've got people that have been around for 20 years that have got my clients I'm trying to go for. Why the hell do they care about Rob sat in an office as a one-man band who's talking about, you know, nothing of real value with not much experience? They don't, right? So that's where I noticed that I thought, right, how can I stand out? What could I do that other competitors are not doing? And this is where the thought leadership personal brand piece came in, right? A lot of people were company brands, company established, and they're very conditioned in terms of, we have a social media policy, we do this, you serve this client. They didn't allow their people to be people to express themselves. And I thought, well, I've come out of the corporate cage. I can just go and be myself. I've taken a big enough risk. I've transitioned across three markets. I've set up a, you know, I started my career in a recession. I've been through a pandemic running a business, which is fast forward a bit, but I thought, you know what, I'm prepared to take a risk. So why don't I think of content pillars or vehicles that will enable me to enhance my reach, leverage the tools that I have to ultimately get known and bring in inbound leads rather than trying to call someone and say, hey, can you give me your business? No, we've been using these people for the last 20 years. We don't really care. There's no value you can give me. So I'll give you an example. We were the first legal recruiting or what I call talent solutions company now focused on community because we do a lot of things with events and the whole thing, the whole package, right? Because I really believe the power of winning is community now moving forward. If you don't have a community, I think you're in trouble. So we set up a podcast, right? So we're the first legal recruiting firm at the time in the UK to set up a podcast and everyone laughed, right? Competitors laughed like, what the heck is this? You know, why on earth is a recruiting company doing that? But hey, yeah. Instead of me ringing up my target client and saying, hey, have you got any jobs for me to recruit? I would say, hey, I've seen your articles online and your blogs. I think I can amplify your reach significantly talking to your legal audience. You know, I've seen that you've been talking about your latest mergers deal that hit the press. Mm-hmm. Imagine being able to tell that story and get that out in 5,000 cities and do that in a half an hour session. And I will create transcripts, blogs, audio content, all of this for free that then you can give to your marketing team. And I'll make sure that it's also evergreen so you can use it time and time again. And we can also get it embedded into your website. When do I come on the show? Great. Then you give them the world's best experience on a podcast. And then at the end of that, you're like, oh, and by the way, oh, Rob, I've noticed as we got chatting, you also do the recruiting. Yeah, when we're hiring, I'm going to give you a call, right? So I've led my relationship with value, right? I've given something. I've put something into an ecosystem. I started building relationships off the back of helping people where lawyers are historically not very good at marketing. They're not very good at putting themselves out there, but they're very good communicators typically. So putting them in an audio environment is pretty easy for them because they can talk quite easily. It's their safe space and they charge by the hour. So if I can produce so much value to them in half an hour, rather than, and by the way, oh, we can use your story as part of a job description. We can send that out to candidates. We can market it differently. Wow. We've got a slightly different angle on top of the other legal recruitment firms that are just sending the old, you know, SHIT out. And so, you know, it was such a different way to attack a market through providing value that we kind of got known. And yeah, having a content pillar like a podcast was a great way to start.
That's so smart in like how you outreached via podcast or and then that it later turned into inbound because then they got to know you. Like, I just think that's how did that come to you?
Do you know what? I always believe in giving credit to others, right? So, of course, you know, my company, my idea, I, in theory, make the final decision. But there was a young lady who I hope listens to this one day, who's now gone on to be a lawyer, is Hannah Foley, who, check her out. You know, she's going to be a hotshot lawyer for sure. She always wanted to be a lawyer, but she worked with me at the start of her career. And she said, Rob, I think we should think about doing a podcast. And at the time, you know, I always have a curious hat. There's nothing you can say to me that doesn't sort of, if you're an immediate naysayer, like you've got a limited mindset, right? Where I was like, okay, well, tell me why. You know, what could we do with this? And then we sat down and had a meeting. And then my other friend, because I also invest in recruitment tech businesses, had just started a recruitment podcast. And I was like, right, interesting. And then we all got in a meeting room. We thought, let's make this happen. And then you'll know Mel as an experienced podcaster. I was like, how can we be the most strategic with launching a podcast? Because again, no one cares that I've launched a podcast. Like, I don't care if someone's launched a podcast. Why should I care? And so we thought, what's the best way to do that? Right. The best way to start a podcast, folks, trick number one is go on someone else's podcast who's got an audience that's going to be useful for yours, right? So I'm a recruiter. So I went on to a recruitment podcast that was more established, that had a good audience, that had visibility, that had some knowledge, right? I went on there, talked some sense, and I put a simple call to action at the end of that podcast to bounce that audience into mine. 2 weeks later, I then launched my own show. So I'd already had visibility and known as someone for podcasting. And I was strategic. Then I brought in my first two guests, male and female guests, a duo. We typically only do one, who were part of a society who had a mailing list of 10,000 people. right? Who are the London Young Lawyers Group. So I was like, right, I'm going to get them in because what are they going to do? They've got the novelty way back when going on podcasts was like fun and excited. They're going to distribute that to their network. So immediately I'm getting free marketing off for an hour of a time to their database, to that data that is core people that are going to be my future candidates, my future clients. And there, the rest is history. But that's kind of like how we strategically started and made it all work.
That's super, super smart of how strategically you thought of that. I actually just wrote that down, how to be strategical with starting a podcast. Like, I need to do that podcast again because I remember the first podcast I ever did was with the person that was helping me to start my podcast. Like, I knew I needed to be like, I needed help, you know, because you're like, you don't even know what the hell's going on. You don't know, you need an intro, you need an outro, then it's like, how does this work? And, you know, I mean, I thought you just go on Zoom and you just have a chat, but there's all this post-production work. And then as you do it, by the way, it gets super, super easy over time once you've got the setup, like the initial thing. So the podcast idea, were you already posting like on social before the podcast idea? Like, were you like sort of putting, you know, bits and pieces out already?
So I was following LinkedIn's journey, right? Because I'd been on LinkedIn, because LinkedIn has changed since I started as a recruiter because it was just jobs, right?
Yes.
You won't, if you go over my content, you will see I haven't posted an explicit job ad, which is my core part of what I do, which is my sort of headline top service offering.
Yes.
In the last 5 years, I don't think you'll see one posted on my LinkedIn. You know, anyone who listens to this wants to hold me accountable because I know that's not what my audience wants, right? That's transactional.
Yeah.
So I always say to people, we're not building another legal recruitment business database. We're building a community. That's different. To feed that community, you've got to give them something. So I was flirting with LinkedIn, putting some posts out. I think they're pretty crappy, to be honest. But just sort of thinking, okay, you can post on LinkedIn now. You can do these various things. And so I was getting comfortable there and I was getting a lot of judgment. By the way, you will never go through trying to do something without criticism, breakups potentially with business partners, issues, because you're doing something that is different, which is scary. And also a lot of people take pride in holding certain people back, right? So if you're going to put yourself out there, you've got to have that why that's so, like we've talked about before, to just keep going regardless. So I was starting to put stuff out on LinkedIn and that's when Hannah was like, we could maybe do, you know, something else. And that's where we got in, I got super curious. And from there, you know, started posting on LinkedIn and did, I think, you know, fast forward to today, you know, I'd be advising LinkedIn, you know, hosting their legal, you know, LinkedIn audio beta testing products, going to their offices, you know, all these other brands, you know, getting sponsors. Maybe we could talk about that. You know, how we're the only legal podcast or one of to have a legal tech unicorn and Centaur, which is basically a company that earns over 100 million annual recurring who are like backing us now. It's pretty phenomenal that we went from that to where we are today.
Do you think that's all because of you investing in your personal brand?
Yeah, I do. I'm verbose enough to say that. Now, it takes time, energy, and effort. So there is a few years between that, right? So we started the podcast in 2019. I started my company in 2016. So, you know, so you'll know, people see the top lines now. They'll go to a profile, they'll see all of these things and be like, wow, I want that overnight success. This was never an overnight success, you know. And by the way, you can never rest on your laurels because the only thing for sure is it's very easy. My grandfather, my greatest mentor, he said it's very easy to be successful.
Yes.
It's far harder to stay successful. And it's so true, right? You know, anyone can be successful or have a one night, you know, or have that one thing, but staying successful and actually, you know, that is really hard. And so you've always got to be thinking of new things. And so we're always thinking of new things and thinking about how we can stay successful. But yeah, for sure. I think the personal brand has a lot to contribute to where we are today.
Yeah. When you talk about, I remember when I once posted like 4 or 5 years ago, it must be now, and I got 1 million views and I was like, holy shit, like I've hit jackpot. And you know, the thing to stay at that level and to get it time and time again is like almost impossible because, you know, there was algorithm at play. There was just the right time. There was the right topic. It was like maybe something really, you know, hot that you said that just, you know, caught on fire in that moment, how people, the social feel was. And then, you know, you maybe go again. And I remember like sort of, I've had 6 months where I only used to get like, you know, very little reach, like sometimes 2,000, like going from a million down to like, kind of counting impressions because that's all you can see, right? Sometimes it's just the easiest thing to count the metrics. And to stay consistent through the content journey of investing when you're seeing ups and downs, and because it challenges you and you're like, oh, maybe this is not working. Or and so many of my clients that come on and say, you know, I want to build a personal brand like you, and they go, you know, I'm willing to do this for 3-6 months, and I just go, you know, just keep on walking. Because I would probably 4 years ago, if you come and ask, I'd say yeah, we'll go over. And because LinkedIn was off, of course, a more different place as well, where people weren't producing high quality content, so you could probably make community much more faster. It's a much different space. And if you don't have that long mindset, like you said, this could be a 2-3 year journey for some people before they see anything. But because they're learning, that's what I think you're doing through content. You're learning what people like, you're reiterating, you're looking at what you're putting out. Does it actually reflect what who you are? And you're growing at the same time as a person through this. So you're only getting better and better and better, just like anything else. And people don't see that. They just think, I'm going to come in there and I'm going to rock it, and I'm going to, you know, the quality of you as a person is also growing constantly. So the quality of your content, I believe, also grows alongside of you.
Yeah, no, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think, you know, ultimately with all of this, it's really important to remember that it is a journey. You know, it's not this sort of, you know, quick sprint. You speak to any creator, anyone who's kind of gone online. But you just gave a great example of, if I was to say to someone, hey, do you want to spend a little bit of time on a platform that's free to get 1 million views for your business? How can you not say no to, yes, I need to double down on that? Like, tell me a platform which is free, which has over nearly, you know, is on scale to have over 1 billion users, which is a 24/7 professional networking site. We're in different time zones right now.
Yes. Right?
LinkedIn is real, right? I'm a big fan of some other platforms that I think are challenging LinkedIn, and I'm a massive ambassador for LinkedIn, but I also think people need competition. So I like the Web3 platforms like Entra, which I'm an ambassador for, and I like their quirky and their Web3 technology and how it rewards creators and pays you to post and things like that.
Yeah.
But you can't afford not to be on LinkedIn. Like, you cannot. Your most of your audience typically are there, or maybe it's Instagram, but not being on these platforms, which is free. Because if you're not paying for the product, you are the product, but play the game and you're going to get the views and impressions. And if your content and strategy, like you say, Mel, is good enough, you're going to get people coming to you, and it's going to be good for your business.
Correct. And I think it's the content and strategy. It will take you sometimes time to unlock, because when you're starting out, you're kind of not sure, and you're sometimes probably confused. Who is my audience? You know, like, I'm sure when you start, like, is it lawyers am I speaking to, or who is it in the law firm, you know, that I actually want? Because for you, you've got probably a two-sided marketplace. So a lot of people that I meet, and they come to me and they're like, I've got a marketplace, they actually get very confused as to who their audience is. Is it the law firm, or is it the damn lawyers, right? Am I attracting the talent? Am I meant to make content for them, or am I meant to make content to please the law firm? So how did you decide on that process of who? What's your content strategy? That's probably the, you know,
So if we go back to my podcast, you know, I used to listen to Steve Olscher, who's really good at podcasting. You know, he knows a thing or two. And I was on one of his webinars, and he talked about, have a topic of influence. I was like, what the heck's a topic of influence? He's like, think about, what is that pain point? What is the pain point of the audience that you wish to serve? And it should be no more than one or two words. Because with that, you're going to be able to produce the content that your audience wants. So I'll give you an example. Our Legally Speaking podcast, our topic of influence is legal careers, right? Because we're recruiting for, we're trying to attract lawyers that are looking for jobs. We're also trying to attract clients that may be hiring. But if all we talk about is jobs, it's going to be quite boring and mundane. But if we talk about the future of law, or maybe how you can be successful, or maybe how someone went on this journey that's inspirational, or we talk about the latest legal technological advancements, or we talk about diversity, equity, inclusion, how we're shaping and changing the profession for good, or we talk about mental health, or we talk about all of these things connected, we suddenly start thinking, right, legal careers is our top of the funnel, but we have all of this really good, interesting content underneath that people are going to want to consume. So, for example, somebody may be putting into Google how to avoid burnout as a lawyer. Like they're worked up and stressed up, right? So we're strategic in terms of how we title our episodes, the content we produce, the hooks we use, the guests we bring in, because we can then look at that and actually provide something into the system that's part useful for the community. So, I think everyone should know what the topic of influence is. Like, what is that one or two words going into Google? And look, you can go onto Google Trends. You can go on to, you know, answerthepublic.com. You can use all of these free available resources to get the Google Index link data to actually what your audience is looking for. And then you can start producing content, and you can then go and use these AI tools to hyper enhance your content ideas and finesse and tweak them. And it suddenly doesn't become difficult. It's just all knowing the strategy and tactics behind it, like you say, Mel. But that's kind of us. So it was kind of legal careers, everything I want to know. And then, of course, there's a sub branch for me as Rob the individual, because, you know, the entrepreneur side of thing, the investor side of thing, it then creates curiosity and gets me sort of interesting things. But it's never far removed from legal careers talent, because it's recruitment tech businesses, legal tech businesses that I'm typically involved in, or technology businesses that I invest or sit on the boards of. So it's really like knowing your lane, knowing the topic of influence. Like, people will come to you with your common questions. So think about like the top two or three questions you continuously get asked by your audience. Turn that into one or two words. That's probably your topic of influence. And then you start producing content.
Got it. What I really love about some of your topics was it actually would be something that both of the side of the marketplace will be curious about, you know? Yeah. So if you're like, oh, okay, you can actually go interview someone that's actually been successful and say, you know, tell me about your career. Now you're getting to be known by them. And they love, people that are successful love telling their story. And then you've got the talent that's coming in and listening and digesting that content. So you've actually gone and hit the two birds with one stone. And I think anyone listening on, I think that's a really powerful strategy to think about. If you can produce content that somehow at least gets you in front of both the marketplace, like in this case, you're getting in front of them by actually interviewing them. And then the other case is other people are consuming that. And I think both audiences are very interested in the content that you're producing. Super smart.
You've got it straight. You've got it straight the way. I think the one thing where maybe I need to get more comfortable with as well is but if you want to increase your income, increase your offers and call to actions. Like, very straightforward, right? If you want to do that, we don't do that as much as we should. We've got to a stage now where we've obviously got sponsorship revenue, we've got a Discord community, we've got membership options, et cetera, et cetera. But it'd been very easy for us to put on the end of every email, everything, oh, by the way, here are jobs, we're looking for a job now. But I'm like, no, because my mission is bigger than the transaction, right? So it's like, let's keep feeding the community with everything and make them want to know, like, trust us, show up and be consistent, because we all know about consistency. It's changing a little bit now, because a lot of people just say consistency. It's quality of consistency that's important.
Yes,
you know, because
I agree.
Now with AI tools in, anyone can show up every day. You could just go to ChatGPT, create me a year plan of content and just plan it, right? And it'll do it for you. So you don't even need to think. So it's the quality, it's the thought that goes behind it that's going to be relevant, that's going to make you stand out. Because otherwise it's just in the noise.
Absolutely. I mean, when I had Jasmine Alec on, he said he spends 10 hours per post that he does for the carousel. And, you know, that's why imagine 10 hours to do one post. So you wonder why he's one of the top number one creators on LinkedIn right now, because he's going above and beyond what anyone else probably is in the market. And it's just simple as that. He's really focused on quality and then doing that consistently. So I agree. Do you know what? When I talk to founders and, you know, they're making a decision point about, okay, personal brand, the obsession with, well, what's the ROI?
Mm.
Is really, you know, quite the topic. Like, what do I get from doing this, and when can I expect it? And 3 months, 6 months is like 12, you know, 12 months is like such a long time away when they think about this. And what's your, you know, what's, how do you think about this?
Well, I just think you gave an amazing example of 10 hours, right? You know, if someone sees the value in something, they will put the time into something because they know they maybe could just get one or two high quality leads through the quality that is put out or what have you. But to my point, I don't look at things as the ROI, right? Because I think it's very easy to get disappointed. I think I look at it in terms of the COI, the cost of inaction. So let's take my journey, for example. No one knew who I was 5 years ago. no one really cared who I was. Yes, I was known in the corporate circuit, but to get to sort of being sponsored by a legal tech unicorn, to be invited by Thomson Reuters to speak, to be invited by LinkedIn, by all of these brands, to be going on amazing shows, to being flown around the world to all of these amazing things, there's a massive cost of inaction there. Because if I hadn't done that, I'd just be still doing the mundane, the normal, and struggling, right? So I always think about, okay, point one, how much do you want to earn? Because if you don't know how much you want to earn, it's very hard. When do you want to earn it by, and work backwards to make it sound like it's achievable for you? A lot of people will say, hey, Mel, I'll give you $10,000 or whatever it is. Great, so I'm gonna get $120,000 back in year one. It's like, it doesn't work like that. But let's look at the cost of inaction of you not investing now, and actually where you potentially could be. And let's put a strategic plan again that could actually work as a system. And let's look at how good your quality lead flow is, or what your highest ticket client is. Because for me, I got one of my highest ticket clients 3 years into doing this. I didn't have no idea, because don't forget the lurkers, folks. We want the lurkers. We don't care. Of course, we love our loyal people and our connectors and our commentators, and they give us the visibility and they come to us. They're not really your buyers. They're your community friends. You know, your friends don't really buy from you. They support you and they champion you, but your clients are the lurkers, right? And so I was able to get a high ticket client who was like, oh, I've been following what you've been posting. You know, we've got this really exciting mandate, and bang, there's a $60,000 fee for us, right? So it's sort of that cost of inaction of not putting something out into the system. But it wouldn't have mean, you know, month one, I get a return on investment, or month two, because it doesn't always work like that. So you have to kind of believe in why you're doing it. Understand, like, what is the point of doing this? Is it a vanity play? By the way, there's no issue with a vanity play, by the way. If you want to get yourself out there and tell people and be the number one, fine, you do you. But if it's because you want to, you know, make a change, or you want to increase your revenue or whatever, look at it in terms of a cost of inaction of not doing it, because your competitors will be. You know, people will be doing this. Like, I've come in and disrupted. I'm waiting for the article, which, by the way, my biggest dream is to get in the top legal, and I've been in legal press everywhere, is Rob Hanna came in, disrupted, did it with pretty lean resources, and became like the number one thought leader within his space, right? I'm waiting for that article. We've had similar, but not like that market leading one. That's where I'm going to, because that for me then kind of is everything trickles down. You then become also little things, like in my job, we really struggle with gatekeepers, right? Or like people that are naysayers, or like would stop that. When you get to a level of sort of thought leader, your sudden level of connections and C-suite and decision makers and people who talk to you, a lot of the mid-level stuff doesn't matter, because you've got to a level where people talk to you, your level of influence in the market is so good that you can pick and choose the types of clients you want. You can pick and choose your fees, all of that good stuff.
Yeah, I love what you just said. I think it's called attraction marketing. Someone recently told me that, you know, Mel, what you do is attraction marketing. And that's what you're doing. You know, you're attracting like people to you through your influence, and you're seen as an authority by building your personal brand. You know what? One thing, I keep going between personal brand and thought leader, personal brand and thought leader, because there's like two, like some people don't like the use of the word personal brand. Sounds Instagram-y. Sounds like kind of vanity. So we use this other thing called, you know, yeah, I want to be a thought leader. What do you think? Like, do you think that you're building a personal brand, or do you think, you know, you're positioning yourself as a thought leader?
I'm positioning myself as me. So here's the thing. My best quote I think I've heard, which is when my late grandfather passed away, and I heard it at his funeral. Live respected, die regretted. So I want to be respected for what I do. If people see me as a personal brand builder, as a thought leader, that's fine. But for me, I want to be, you know, Rob really tried to do something for the good. And the lion's share of people are on board with that. You're never going to get everybody, and that's fine. So thought leader, personal brand, I don't care, to be honest. I just want to do me, and I want that to come from, you know, what he tried to do was, particularly in the industry, which is heavily regulated, it's very risky to step out the box. You know, what if I put a typo in my, you know, LinkedIn post? Lawyers are going to think I can't spell, you know, all of these things, right? So for me, it's live respected, die regretted. That's what I live by.
Cool. Tell me your content process, you know, like how do you go about creating content, your curation of ideas initially, and then, you know, your process of content too, until we see it on our feeds? Yeah.
I think there's two parts to this. One, when you get to a level, you have to engage with your community. So there's a level of social listening, right? You've got to be, you know, understanding what does your audience want, right? Because you're never going to know in its entirety. So we have a Discord community built up of, you know, thousands of individuals and legal professional, which is engagement. We have a community manager. Hey, what's the sort of things you'd be interested in? What would be helpful? You know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Plus, we look at the data. So we look at those tools that I mentioned before in terms of what are people searching for on the likes of answerthepublic.com, Google Trends. You know, we read around the industry press. What are the hot topics? What are the debates? And by the way, folks, simple hack. You can just go to LinkedIn, go to the LinkedIn news section. Look at trending now. Look at the biggest hashtags. Where are the conversations happening right now? Where can you come in and hijack audience and start sharing a perspective, maybe a story, maybe with a good hook? You're going to start getting visibility. You're going to get audience. You're going to start jabbing away and you're probably going to hook a client eventually. So we do all of that good stuff. And then do you know what also I do, Mel? I post whatever the hell I want. And that's also a point about, you know, creators. You know, you also have to be prepared to, some days I'm just going to post this to feel good. You know, I remember when I did, I was doing a LinkedIn audio. Gary Vee, a lot of people probably will be familiar with Gary Vee. He and I did a LinkedIn audio where we, you know, he asked, I was doing a 15-minute session, doing some questions. It's on my LinkedIn. And I shared the top three things that Gary Vee said. And he said, point one, you know, creator, just post what you care about. You know, point two, don't care about what people care about you. Thinking about what you're posting about, don't let that stop you. I think it's so, so important. And be yourself, right? And I think the reality is, as well as I want to put out lots of thought-provoking content with my podcast, with events, with collaborations, I think that's something we haven't talked about, but is super important, is collaborating. I gave that example of the London Young Lawyers Group, 10,000 people. You know, I collaborate with legal societies, legal influencers, legal individuals, because, again, it's a good thing to do, but it's a great way to enhance visibility. And ultimately, you know, sometimes on top of all of that, events... just post what feels right. Maybe there's a thought, maybe there's a story. And by the way, if you increase your vulnerability, you'll increase your visibility. So, you know, I always say that, like, don't condition yourself with the post. Like, if you find yourself pulling back on the post will go down. If you find yourself just ripping the band-aid off and being more real, the more reach it will get. So, you know, I will share something. Maybe it's about a time that I screwed up. Maybe it's a lesson in recruitment. Maybe it's whatever. They tend to do a lot better because it's authentic me, not conditioned me.
I love that post what you care about. I think, you know, that's such a great strategy. Along with, obviously, like, you are posting from your podcasts and snips, but you've got to be real. I think the authenticity is what I hear people going, I like how authentic you are in how you show up. And I think that really distinguishes you from the rest. And I really think, let's talk about collaboration. And as you are building personal brands, if you can get your strategy right, which we've talked about, you can get your production route right. The next thing you do need to get right is your collaborations, because that is going to take you to the next level, right? Is to who are the people that you need to collaborate with. So for me, you know, I really love talking to some really big voices that are getting a lot of attention on LinkedIn. They're becoming thought leaders in their space, and I want to hear how they're doing it, how they think, so that, you know, it can help others. But I also get a lot of influence and I pick up their audience by also bringing them on here. So it's like kind of a cross sharing of giving back to people that want to know how they're doing it and getting them heard back. Because sometimes some of them don't have a podcast or don't want to do that as a form of content. But collaboration, I think, really can help you speed up getting found by your audience. What's your experience, Rob?
I agree. I believe, you know, another expression I've heard from one of my mentors is collaboration is domination, right? So you always got to think about... Everyone's favorite radio station is WIFM, what's in it for me, right? So when you're thinking about trying to collaborate with somebody, it's like, yes, there's probably something you want to get from it. But again, you've got to think about, well, what are they going to get from this? What's the value prop for them? So, you know, it's really important to understand that. And then it's more authentic collaboration. Also where there's mutual synergies, right? And maybe where there's not, where there's cross-pollination or where there's mutual benefit. So you know, I would say, for example, we're sponsored by a legal tech unicorn. That's a great collaboration. Why are they interested in us? Well, of course, they, similar to you, Matt, very kindly have been following my LinkedIn journey, looking at the reach, looking at the kind of, you know, the community that's built. But they're interested because it's a mutual win, right? Because they're trying to target with their technology law firms. They're trying to sell their product into law firms, a legal practice software management, right? And my day in and day out is talking to law firms, right, about talents and about all these other things. So it's a mutually beneficial collaboration for us to go down that route. So I'm a big believer in think about, like, what's in it for the individual? What are they going to get out of it? How is it going to be advantageous? And also just try and have fun with it. You know, I think if you collaborate with right and like-minded individuals, not only does it give you infectious energy, it makes you feel good, but you get a lot more from it as well. And then you'll be able to build off the back of it. Through my collaborations, I've been able to grow immensely. So absolutely, collaboration is domination.
Do you know what I think that you've got something special is? You've got really great one-liners, you know, that you have said that I've been writing down. You know, I think you said, you know, increase your vulnerability to increase your virality or something like that. And then
increase your vulnerability to increase. Do you know what? A tip, by the way, talking sound bites. If you want to get, you know, if you really want to leave an impression on somebody, and this was one thing I was taught by one of my mentors as well, sometimes because people get bored of listening to a story. I'm not the most engaging storyteller. It's something I need to work on. But I'm very good at sound bites. And that's sometimes what can make impact when you're trying to communicate as well.
Yeah, I love it. I feel like you need to just do like Daniel Murray and just do the one-line posts. Like,
yeah.
Just like, I was actually like, I'm just going to pull out scripts from what you've said that are like super sound bites and be like, just post these.
But we could do a collaborative week, right, together. We could create, like, images, graphics. We've got creator's hat on now where we could, like, maybe I post it one day. I was a show. You can be, like, Rob as a guest, and we could do that as, like, a mini series. Exactly. And, like, hey, what's your favorite call to action on it, drive engagement, all that good stuff.
I think so, but you're really hitting me with these one-liners. I mean, I've never had such strong one-liners. I'm like, you just need to be doing one-liners, okay? Like, I've recently seen some top creators move to one-liners. And they're killing it because people are like literally like scanning their feed and they're just like going super like strong. And you've got it. You've got that ability to say it so strong.
This is why I also love coming on podcasts, because you very kindly have me as your guest, but I'm also learning from you, right? I'm getting free coaching right now from you because every day is a school day. So yeah, cool. And please like make me actionable to that as well. Like,
I know.
Rob, you came on my show.
I'm
going
to send you
like,
them. I need things to online. Yeah. I'll star them in my save section and be like, look, this is what we need to do, team. Like, this is the sort of, you know, content that we need to put out for people that have got really good sound bites, because some people are just really good at it. So I like that for you. Okay, so what about like the creation part of the content? Like, how much time are you now spending like with your videos? Are you just holding camera to face and just, you know, as you're having a moment and here I am, and then posting it direct to LinkedIn, or have you got some sort of like Trello board or Asana board where you're keeping some of this stuff?
I always have a sort of notes, so like thoughts, ideas. I'm bizarrely keep stuff in my calendar, like have a thing and it's like loads. So any thought that comes into my head, I'm never going to be short of content because I'm always having thoughts, right? And if you're struggling for content, go for a walk.
Yeah.
Honestly, go for a walk and you'll be amazed by the amount of thoughts that come into your head. Everyone's seen that analogy of like the waterfall and, you know, when they go for a walk, more water comes down.
Yeah.
But also, you know, it's important also to be real. You know, when I first started, we were doing a lot of the heavy lifting ourselves on a very low budget. As you suddenly become, you know, you grow, revenues pull up, you're able to invest more. So I have a whole podcast production team that do my videos, do my editing. Now, I would personally like them to be a little bit more raw, but when you start entering into corporate sponsorship agreements or certain things, standards and, you know, industry standards need to be met to, you know, be so of that. So that is very much outsourced now, but it saves me time, right? You know, if I look at everything is like, where can I save time? So I do that. But sometimes I will just literally iPhone on a walk, talk about something. I was talking about the importance of recruiters being recruitment consultants. I shot a video the other day, I think it's on my LinkedIn, like 2 weeks back. And, you know, did a poll about something, gave my thoughts, my reflections on it. And, you know, it's just authentic, real, and people enjoyed it. So, you know, never be afraid to just be you, just because you're seeing all these incredible videos. And of course, you know, it depends on the audience who you're trying to target, because if you're selling video editing as a service, you probably want them to be top notch to stand out. But if you're just a legal recruiter, community builder like me, they don't expect me to be the best video guy in the world, right? They expect me to be me. They want to listen to my brain, listen to if I've got anything interesting to say, any wisdom to share. And you get better and you get more confident over time. And by the way, leave the odd or if you blah, 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 you know, whatever, like leave it in there because it's a bit more real.
Yeah. So with your podcast now, with the sponsorship and so forth, you were telling me that you've got guests of Shark Tank coming on to your podcast.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more.
So, yeah, so over here we have the equivalent of Shark Tank called Dragon's Den. So recently we had Piers Linney, who also was one of the dragons who had one of the record-breaking investment in the den. So I'm a big believer in NSN, never stop networking. So I'm everyday networking. It's like my number one thing. I'm always looking to meet new people, engage, start conversations, carry on conversations, whatever. This is an example. My podcast agency, who do my podcast, he also has a podcast, and he's had Stephen Bartlett on that maybe a lot of people might know now. The name's getting more and more bigger. And he had Piers Linney. And I was like, by the way, he was a former lawyer. Can you just intro him and tell him about our show and all this? And he's like, sure. Easy as that. Asking the question. And he then obviously we'd sold. Obviously, we said we're in 5,000 city, top 1% of shows worldwide, then over 200 episodes, had all these incredible people. Cara Baskin from Tiger King on Netflix, you know, all of these amazing things and people we've had on the show. And it was as straightforward as that. So sometimes finding the people, I would say, who do you know who can introduce you to someone you don't know is the best way to think about networking. So I use someone I knew to introduce me to someone I didn't know warmly. And as a result of that, I got the result I wanted. So, you know, that was how that particular scenario happened. I'm just very big and just sort of putting yourself out there, asking, but leading with value as well. Because if you ask for something and then nothing's really getting anything back, that's take. And taking doesn't always lead to a long relationship. It leads to a transactional, short-lived relationship. So think about ways that you can start. And by the way, this is what I always say to people entering their career. It's like, Rob, I've got no experience. I can't help anyone. I was like, you know tech skills that could super enhance my business in a minute because you maybe been sat on Discord or maybe you've been sat in this or you've been doing that. I was like, you could easily come and add value to my business straight away just because you don't know how to do the technicalities of legal recruiting. I can teach you that. Like, I know that. I'm a Muppet. You can easily do that. You can bring value straight away. So don't underestimate what you know to what people don't know, because a lot of people don't know what you know. So everyone has a value.
How did you... To end with this, how did you then, like from KC Partners, how did you then get into like sort of investing and getting into all these tech, you know, investments? Like when did that happen? Is that also through inbound? Is that through as you're building personal brands, people started approaching you? Tell me more about that.
The latter, really. So as you'll know, with building a personal brand, your networks as an extension of that. I always say, your personal brand is your biggest asset, but it's also your biggest insurance policy. So let's use an example. My companies could all go bust tomorrow. Not saying that they would, but I could lose every company, but I'll never lose my personal brand, right? So with that is a network. It's an email I could send to someone. Now I could send an email to a Shark Tank, you know, someone off Dragon's Den and be like, hey, I actually introduced them to someone. They just introduced them to me, but I could lose everything and I could still use the contacts that I built from that personal brand. So that's why it's so, you know, people see it's not woo woo. This is really important stuff. It's like really, because we live in an online world, you know, if you're not visible, you're invisible nowadays. You know, it's really important that people understand that word of mouth was great years ago when people were going to lots of offline events and meeting up, but lion share, people are working. You're in Bali right now. I'm in the UK. We're working at whatever time zones we meet. We're not going to all of these offline events and having that word of mouth discussion. We live online, right? And so you've got to be visible. A lot of it has come through building a personal brand. I've got involved in interesting conversations. And as a result of those conversations, they've led to interesting deal offers and opportunities and investments. So I'm proud to be part of some really exciting investments. One is we've just gone through a rebrand called Hector, which is a recruitment tech business. And again, it aligns with my what I want to be known for, because we're providing a learning and development ed tech platform for recruiters to ensure that we're bringing out the best of the next generation recruiters, who I was 12 years ago. I'm investing in that. It's in my lane because it's connected to talent recruiting tech, which I love talking about. It made sense. Legal tech, obviously I recruit lawyers. It's interesting when I speak to a partner, it's like, oh, you're just another recruiter. It's like, no, I do community. I do this. I've got investments. I can offer them some sort of interesting conversation, because any deal, any relationship, anything always starts with a conversation.
I think that you are just one of those serial entrepreneurs that I love having on the show. I mean, this is called Innovative Minds because I love talking to people who've got that innovative mind. And, you know, it's just been a pleasure exploring that innovative mind of yours and how you think. I really resonate with so much. I mean, I feel so connected and similar in our thinking. And that's what I love exploring is, you know, other minds that are thinking in a very similar way, that love tech, that love progression, that are very, you know, thinking about innovation and being forward and constantly pushing to be the best in their market and reaching their, unleashing their full potential, and understand that personal brand is absolutely part of it. So thank you for joining me. I'm really looking forward to sharing this, one of my, you know, favorite pieces, because I've recently realized that I need to tell more stories about people's whys, you know, and more of their journeys on their thought leadership journey. So thank you for being here. I'm really honored to have this connection and this conversation.
Well, no, thank you, Mel. It's been a real pleasure. I hope, you know, your listeners get some value from today, but I'm available, right? So if people want to follow me on LinkedIn or drop me a message, they're very welcome to do so. It's just Robert Hannah on LinkedIn. If you're in the legal wider world or curious about the world of law, we have a Discord community. Again, just feel free. It's the link on my profile. You're welcome to join that. It's open because we work on trust and we have it all vetted. And yeah, it's just been an absolute pleasure. Really, really enjoyed being part of your show. Love what you're doing. And here's to lots more continued success for me, you, and your community.
Thank you so much. And yes, the link to the LinkedIn profile will be in the description, so you can just go over and hit that and follow Rob Hannah. Thank you.
Thank you.
You are listening to Innovative Minds.